thanks for being here for another episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. I'm Rachel, and I'm glad to have you for today's interview with Strong Towns member Shalita Miller. First, I have to say she was very patient and gracious with me because our first recording attempt did not work due to an internet issue on my end. So I'm especially glad that we were able to reschedule and make it happen. Shalita is an accountant and citizen activist based in Gary, Indiana. It's a community that's been through some serious economic challenges, but it's also her hometown, and she is dedicated to making it stronger. In this conversation, Shalita talks about what drew her to the Strong Towns movement, particularly with her background in economics and accounting. And she also talks about her on-the-ground knowledge of why doing the math and determining the long-term impacts of public investment is so important. Finally, and perhaps most important, Shalita talks about the ways that she has taken initiative to help residents in her town stay in the loop about what's going on, often behind closed doors, in local government. And she shares how she's working to address the problems that government isn't always stepping up to solve. Because she has worked with government agencies in the past, she really understands and she empathizes with both sides of these challenges, the government side and the concerned citizen side of things. Shalita is a model for bottom-up revolutionary action, and I'm pleased to share our conversation with you now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. Today's guest is Strong Towns member Shalita Miller. Shalita, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Rachel, for having me on. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your city, your community?
So my name is Shalita Miller. I am from Gary, Indiana, and my background is a financial background. I'm a CPA, a certified public accountant. My community is Gary, Indiana, as I said before, and it's very much so a blue-collar community, down-to-earth community. We've seen some changes in my community, specifically the decrease in with the United States Steel Mill being our largest employer, going from approximately 30,000 employees in the late 70s or mid-70s to now less than 7 or 8,000 approximately. And then seeing a mass exodus of businesses and people beginning in the early 70s, late 60s with the Hatcher administration. And so seeing the impact of that on our community. So we've definitely been through some ups and downs. And one thing about the people in our community is that we figure it out. We figure it out and we don't hop ship, as we say here. We don't hop ship just because it gets difficult or we have some trying times. And that those situations have been some of the reason why I decided to become a CPA and a major in accounting and economics in undergrad. I wanted to better understand how I can help to make things better in my community. And so here we are today, fast forward about 10 years out of college. And as of today, I have my own business, which is an accounting business. And I also have a community organization called the Gary Awareness Council. And with that council, we seek to make sure that people have the information they need to make good decisions. And so it's just sort of unique, even coming to the Strong Towns movement, joining the Strong Towns family or movement. I was drawn to that organization and those concepts that Charles discussed or have discussed in his book and on different podcasts that I've listened to. On the community side, I see the impact that decisions that are made by elected officials, the impact it has on the community. But then as a business owner, I've worked with public transit. I've worked with school corporations. I've worked with finance departments for local agencies. I've worked with the redevelopment department. I just have seen different situations that have been discussed by Charles. And so it really resonated with me. And one of the primary things or the two primary things that stood out to me with the conversations that Charles have had on his podcast and in his book pertain to the financial aspect of the different projects that communities take on. And just having a financial background and looking at just the cost of projects, one of the things that I noted early on was that a lot of times the long-term financial impact is not discussed, you know, and it's more so, and it's understandable, but the conversation is more so it's about development. Development is always a conversation with local government, but in terms of, you know, what the community is giving and what the community is getting is not discussed in detail in from a financial perspective. So when I heard Charles mention return on investment, that resonated with me immediately. Like I say, as a business owner and as a community member, because a lot of times, especially in these communities with that are in legacy cities where, you know, everybody is concerned about gentrification and you don't have as many resources, or at least that's the understanding, just the common understanding that you don't have as many resources. You're eager to get deals and see things happen in your community, but at the same time, you also have these situations where the community feels as if they haven't gotten their fair share with these deals. And it seems as if we're just shelling out money, but the community is not getting anything back in return. And so I think for me and my journey is just about that, the bottom up revolution that Charles talks about. And the thing that I also like about Charles is that he's not anti-government, or he's just objective. So what is the best route going forward? And he notes in his book that it's not just about like the perfect scenario. There is not necessarily a perfect scenario because these situations are complex. But what is the best scenario in terms of the financial impact long term? And then also I love that he considers the complete picture as opposed to maybe this one group will win, or, you know, you have this attitude of the winner takes all. It can be commonplace in redevelopment deals or development communities. But with Charles, it's about like looking at things from a safety standpoint, from the traffic standpoint, from kids, community. And I think that his way is not just a simple one and done way, but I think that it's what we need. I wholeheartedly believe it's what we need in our communities to turn things around, where we just have to pull the covers back and look at things as they are, and really address the actual problems and not just the symptoms. And I think a lot of times in government, and I understand it, having been in these conversations, been in boardrooms with different directors, there's a lot of pressure. And sometimes that pressure even comes from the community. But it's like at some point we have to stop and say, okay, you know, what are the ramifications of this decision short term and long term, and then actually address the issues. So I know that's a mouthful, and I'll just let you jump in there. There's so much that can be said about that, but it's close to heart. And I definitely believe it's possible. And so it was encouraging to come across your organization with Strong Towns, because you get to see other people who are writing and posting about different things going on in their community. That's you know, similar to my community. So.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I'm glad that this has resonated with you. And yeah, it seems like you're bringing so much of your own experience to understanding how these issues impact your city. So you mentioned the Gary Awareness Council, and I would love to hear some more about that. Yeah, how did you come to form that group, and what do you all do?
So it started off initially, I in doing business with the city, I was always in the loop of different things that were going on in the community. And so people began asking me, like, well, what's going on with this? Or can you give me an answer for this situation? And so it just became apparent that we needed more information provided to the community. Sometimes local governments, they go through, you know, it depends on sometimes who's in a certain position that they provide information. Then sometimes that person is removed, maybe due to budget cuts, and then information is not provided like it once was. And so in an effort to assist with making sure residents get information in sufficient timing, I started the Gary Awareness Council. And so the bottom line is just basically to be a part of the solution. And from that, with the Gary Awareness Council, with, like I say, I was getting the same questions from different members, community members in different communities. And so from that point, I realized that, because I started initially with the community that I reside in, which is one part of our city. So we have maybe 10 neighborhoods and I'm in one neighborhood. And so it started with just my one neighborhood. But then meeting other people say, what's going on here? Or they would ask, could they come to a meeting that I was having? I would say, sure, you can come. I mean, it's for my neighborhood, but let's share the information. And so from there, I started a radio show, and the radio show is called Heart to Heart with Shalita Miller. And basically with that radio show, what we do is also we talk about topics that are pertinent to the community. And what I try to do, Rachel, is like apply some information that's educational in nature in terms of this is where we are, but maybe we need to look at this from a different perspective, similar to what Charles does. And then the second part that the show handles is actually addressing, helping community members to have their issues addressed, their 311 issues. And I don't know if you're familiar with the 311 system, but it's just a system where residents can call or text their issues, say if a street light is out or if, you know, they've come across something that's been dumped in an alley, they can enter a ticket and the city will follow up or should follow up with the ticket. And so we were having issues with that. Again, it was just delays where there were some people that were saying, well, I haven't heard back from the city in a year or it's been 2 years. And so what I did was started this following up with the tickets. And so working alongside governmental officials and the community to resolve the issues. And that took me into another perspective, but it just affirmed what I had seen professionally where a lot of times you have these issues and sometimes we think that if we just throw more money at it, that will resolve the issue. But a lot of times it's management of people. You have some people who are new possibly to the department or things have changed and some people are still following the old ways. And so you can throw money at a situation or raise taxes, but that doesn't necessarily address the underlying issue. And so what I try to do with my show is analyze the process, not offer my services because this is what I do professionally as well, helping clients with analyzing their processes. And so I take that concept and I offer it and work with city department heads and say, you know, maybe this way will work better. Or is it possible for us to do it this way? So, for instance, one example of that is in our city, you can't the local government cannot just send individuals or city employees on private property. So even if that person does not maintain their private property, the city can't just go on and bother the property. They have to have permission first. So I just had been researching and I came across a neighboring city who was having the same issue with properties. Properties that are not maintained or have been abandoned. And what they did was they passed the ordinance. The council passed the ordinance that stated they could go on private property and then they also could levy basically your taxes because we were having issues as well with you would issue a citation, but the property owner would not pay the citation. And so what the neighboring city did was to tie the citation to your taxes. So when you pay your taxes, you will be billed for the city going onto your property and cutting that grass. And so then that way the neighbors are happy and also the city is reimbursed. And so in my show, I assist with tickets. But I also had a show where I explained this process that a neighboring community implemented. And so one of the things that I'm actually following up on this week for my show that's on Friday will be, you know, what's the council take with passing this ordinance? So that way we can look at how we can implement a similar system. And again, one of the things that I discussed was you'll have to analyze and see what the cost will be to the city up front. And then you'll have to see how many people are of those people that are not paying their citations, how many of them are paying their taxes? Because if they're not paying their taxes, then it won't have an effect. But you'll be able to have that high level information to say, okay, 80 or 70% of these individuals are not paying their taxes, but the 70% that are, we can recoup our money from that. It'll take us $100,000 up front to send men and or women out to maintain these properties. And so I try to mix it with my show where we're actually helping to resolve the issues, the symptoms of the issues, but then also what can we do to resolve the underlying issues. So I know that was a lot, but if you have any questions, then feel free to ask.
Yeah, no, that's so impressive. I'm just like blown away by what you're doing. And in some ways, it feels like, you know, you're doing some things that government should probably be doing themselves. But I don't know, do you feel like it's the right role for a citizen, activist, business owner to be doing that? Or do you wish that the government would step up and like take care of this themselves?
I prefer in the long run that the government, the local government, will be able to address these issues in an efficient manner. And then there would, in essence, be no need for me as a citizen to step up and do these things. But at the same time, one of the things that I've learned is that when you have these budget cuts, it helps to save money, but it also cuts down on the manpower. And so even like with the school district, I work with the local school district here. And so I asked some of the veteran people that have been with the school district 30, 40 years. And one of the examples that comes to mind is with the school district and the financial department or the finance department. The department once had 25 people. With the downsizing of the district, the implementation of charter schools or allowing charter schools into the community, and then striving to save money and, you know, budget cuts and so forth, the department was down to 3 people. So that means that in some ways, something is not going to be done. And if you take that, you can apply that, I believe, with other agencies, even as an auditor with the state of Indiana. I saw the same patterns where when you have those budget cuts, sometimes it really is difficult for these governmental agencies to fulfill a lot of these roles. And so that's why my take is, you know, how can we all be a part of the solution? And in what ways can we step up, even if it's small, but in what ways can we step up? So like I'm a huge supporter of having volunteers step up as much as possible where it's legal. You know, like, for instance, if you have retired social workers, if you have retired nurses, if you have retired police officers, you have this wealth of knowledge in these individuals who have retired that can and they have free time. They can come back and volunteer in some way and help departments to be able to fulfill these roles. So I think that overall it's a lot, like just being working with directors, it's so much that comes at you, having, you know, doing work, and I can see both sides where it's literally some days, especially if you are in a financially strained situation, it's some days you have so many things coming at you that it can be difficult. So like I say, I think that it's something that the government, that your local government should do. But in the interim, I'm doing it. But my hope is that in the long run, I wouldn't have to do it. A citizen can put in their ticket, they get a response in a sufficient timing, and we can move forward. So I hope that answered what you were getting at.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, your community is really lucky to have you like stepping up and helping. I appreciate that perspective.
Thank you, Rachel.
So what advice would you have for other people who want to start taking action to make their community stronger, whether it's like trying to help fellow neighbors be more informed about what's going on, or just resolve like some of these small things that really pile up and like cause challenges in their city? What advice would you have for folks who want to step up and take action?
And before I give the advice, I just want to say that, like, as you said, my community is definitely a good thing that I'm involved in the community. But it's been a blessing for me because my community has given so much to me and encouraged me. It's a larger community. We're at about 80,000, but it's very much so like a small town feeling. And so there have been times where literally people that I didn't know in grocery stores have encouraged me if I look down and everything. So it's very much giving back what was given to me. With respect to individuals who are looking to get involved, the first thing I would say is just to stay diligent, because it definitely can be thankless at times. And then you're gonna, you know, run into some issues when you're trying to implement changes. Some people don't like that. And so I would say to stay encouraged through those times and just continue to push forward little by little. And I would say the second thing is that it takes time. I think one of the things that's finally settling in is that, you know, nothing happens overnight, and you're dealing with people and their personalities. And so you have to be patient, you know, and some things will change, some things won't change, you know, but I think in the long run, it definitely makes a difference. And then I would just say the last thing would be to do something that is close to you and that works for you. And when I say that is, I think that you have to find what works for you and what's unique, what's something special that you can give that other people would not give, or something that you care about genuinely that will help carry you through the difficult times. But I think, like, for example, Charles' thing is that he used to be an engineer, so he looks at things from an engineering background. my take is more of a, from a community and a financial background. So I look at it from that perspective. Somebody else, their change may be with working with senior citizens. And from there, they become an advocate. And I feel like as you continue to grow, as your platform continues to grow, then you can touch other areas. You know, you may start out working with kids or with senior citizens, but as your platform grows, that may lead to you being able to leverage your platform to make things better in a community that may not be tied to actually what you work with. So I would just say being unique and authentic to something that you actually care about, that you'll see through to the end, versus kind of just, I think sometimes a lot of us, you start out, you're kind of all over the place and you don't really know like where to start, where to begin. So I would just say finding what's close to heart with you and following that through.
That's very good advice. Appreciate it. Well, Shalita Miller, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation and for all the ways that you're advocating and making your community stronger. I'm just blown away by all of your work. So thanks for the conversation. And I'll share a link to your Heart to Heart radio show too for people listening to this.
Okay. And I want to thank you all too for what you all are doing. What you all are doing is really great. Like I say, it's good to find other people who are like-minded and you get to see things that are happening in other communities that are similar to yours. So similar to the issues your community is experiencing. So thank you all for what you all do as well.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Thanks. Take care, Shalita.
All right. You have a good one, Rachel. Bye-bye.
I hope you appreciated this conversation with Shalita as much as I did. Her passion for our community and dedication to its prosperity are so inspiring. So with that, today's listener voicemail comes from Amrita. Here it is.
Hi, Rachel. My name is Amrita, and I am a junior at Smith College. I study architecture and data science there, though I am interested in going into urban planning after I graduate. And so I'm recording this voice memo mostly because I wanted to share with you how big of a fan I am of your podcast, Bottom Up Revolution. I have learned so much from your interviews and really appreciate the diverse range of people you have chosen to have on to your show. I myself have my own podcast. It's for the Smith College newspaper, and it's entitled 413 Ethnography. Similar to you, I do profiles on people who are within Western Massachusetts, and specifically ones who contribute greatly to building community within their niches. And so I have really loved doing that work. And I think it, although is not directly to my studies in design and city planning, I find that constructing these pieces and getting to know the community helps me put together a collective sort of narrative of Western Massachusetts as a place. And so through those interviews, I've really grown to become more tied down to the community in which I go to school. I guess the last thing I'd want to say is just give you a huge thank you for all the incredible narratives that you've shared with me and so many other listeners. And I feel that your contribution to my learning has been so great. Have a wonderful day.
Amrita, thank you so much for your kind words about the show. I'm really glad it's been helpful for you. And I will make sure to include a link to her podcast in our show notes for our listeners as well. So friends, if you've got a story to share with this crew here on how you're taking action and contributing to the bottom-up revolution in your community, we really want to hear about it. Record a voicemail on your phone or just write a quick email and send it to me, rachel@strongtowns.org. The end of the year is fast upon us, and this is actually our last show of 2020, but we'll be back with fresh episodes for you in the coming year, along with some exciting new initiatives that I really can't wait to share with you. We'll be back soon to talk about those. If you want to be the first to know about those things and knock out some end-of-year giving, perhaps, in the process, now is also a great time to join as a member of Strong Towns. Every dollar supports all the initiatives we do and what we're building up to for next year. Head to strongtowns.org/membership to donate and become an official part of this movement. All right, everybody. It's been wonderful to speak with you, to get to know you a little bit, to share all these stories with you in 2020, this bizarre year. Personally, I'm very glad it's coming to an end, but there's been some bright spots in this show, starting the show and getting to speak with so many fascinating guests, hear from you all, your voicemails and your messages. It's been a highlight of the year for sure. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being part of this. We will see you in 2021.